from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Rolling right along. Three is here, and you know what it is on a Tuesday. It's Christian Fowler at 6 o'clock. At C. Fowler, BCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. Also, we have a podcast called the On the Bluff Podcast. Every single Tuesday at noon, it releases. Talk a lot of things, Tigers. But you find that on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. Christian, how's it going, brother?
Everything's good, Gabe. How you doing on this Tuesday?
I am doing well, man. I am doing well. I can't complain. Zero complaints, sir.
I'd say that's a good thing.
Yeah, we have Tiger football practicing tomorrow. Opening up fall camp tomorrow. I think that is why I'm in a pretty solid mood. We get to talk college football. We get to see some position battles play out. What do you think about this roster, how it's put together as we head into tomorrow?
I think it's the best constructed roster in the American. And obviously, as we talked about last week, the polls reflect that. And I think that's a good place to be for this team. But when you look and dive a little bit deeper into certain position groups, I think they're really deep and talented everywhere, even the places that they're inexperienced or not even necessarily inexperienced, but haven't proven it on this level. And I think, you know, I'm talking more about the secondary with that quote, and, you know, the linebacker group can be thrown in there as well. But offensive line is deep, experienced at most levels. I think they have a chance to be as good, if not better, this year than they were last year. I think, once again, we've said it the past couple of weeks, but I think we're both optimistic and cautiously optimistic at that about the secondary. The talent is there. I think the size, the athletic ability is there. Can they put it all together? We'll see. Linebackers, I think you got to feel really good about that group. I think you got the best linebacker, maybe the best defensive player in the American Athletic Conference in Chandler Martin. You got another slew of transfers there that should make a big impact this year. Receiver, you're not necessarily deep, but you're talented at the top. Running back, you're too deep. Yep. I think you should feel really good about. And then obviously you have the most experienced quarterback in the American and one of the most experienced in all of college football in Seth Hennigan. So overall, I think it's a really balanced roster. I think it's the best Memphis football roster that we've seen in years. And they have a chance to do something that no other Memphis team has done before. And we'll see if they're able to capitalize throughout the year. But the preseason hype, I think, is building as we go into camp on Wednesday.
So we have some position battles that we talked about last night on the podcast. I want to bring that to the radio show. What are we looking out for? I know that, like, there's some questions about the offensive line and the secondary, but one thing that we did talk about last night is you know, there's a lot of competition. Regardless of who ends up starting, there's going to be a lot of competition. And I think there's more depth than we've seen in some years. But what are the position battles? Who are the guys that you expect to step up?
Yeah, I'm interested to see who steps up at the two tackle positions. I'm very intrigued to see, is it a transfer that steps up at those spots? Is it, you know, someone that's been on the roster? You talked about Malachi Breland last night. Does he take control of that job? Is it Chris Adams from Old Dominion? Is it Kedro Lewis? Is it Jalen Nichols from South Carolina? Which one of these guys steps up, or multiple guys steps up, fills those roles, and is, you know, a really good player in their first season at Memphis? Or which one, you know, kind of steps up as a player that's been on campus and that maybe a lot of fans aren't aware of? So I think the offensive line, the tackle spots are important. As we know, those are very, very important for the offense and overall how it functions. So both of those are big spots. And then just overall, I know I've talked about it a lot last week, and I talked about it a lot on the podcast this week, but the secondary is going to be extremely intriguing to see how it shakes out, because it's kind of the same vibe as the offensive line. You have some guys coming back. You have some guys that have been on campus that maybe haven't played a ton but could potentially be ready to take over a big role. And then you have a bunch of transfers that are projected to potentially start or play big rotational roles. You look at Kobe Minor coming in from Indiana at the corner spot. Is he able to lock one of those spots down? Jaden Dennis coming over from Elon. Is he able to find a starting spot in the secondary? And then you have safeties coming in as well. And Taj Rael from Old Dominion, A.J. Watts, a transfer as well, Cortland Marsh, someone that's been talked about coming in from Samford. So there's a lot of new faces, but there are also, you know, Greg Rubin, a guy that's played a ton of football at the University of Memphis, DJ Bell, a guy that started from week one last year. There are so many options in the secondary, and I think that's why I say that I'm cautiously optimistic about it, is because there's so many options that could be successful, so many combinations that could be successful, and can they finally put it together there? So there are a lot of position battles. There are a lot of different rotations that could come out of the secondary, that could come out of the offensive line, that could come out of the linebacker room for that matter. But to me, I think the most important thing for this team going into the season is proving that they can play defense at a better level than they have the last several years. And that hinges on the secondary, because I think we all feel pretty good about the front seven and the way that it's going to shake out. A lot of experience on the defensive line, but can the secondary make life easier on those guys? You know, can they help out? Can they force turnovers? Can they stop people from, you know, throwing the ball down the field? And I truly believe if they get the right combination of players out there, I think they can be much better than they have in years past.
Yes, but we are hesitant, you know what I mean?
100%.
Every single year, you got to be hesitant. You always think it's going to be better, but you just have to watch it play out on the field. Another position battle we talked about sort of last night, and this is sort of secondary because, like, you look at that wide receiver room, it's loaded. Kobe Drake is really your third guy. You have Rock Taylor and Demir. Rock caught for 1,000 yards. Demir caught for nearly 900 yards last year. But I think that, like, those, you know, the fourth wide receiver, the guy who can step into a role, that's always been important to watch out for in Memphis football since sort of 2014. Like Anthony Miller, right? That guy, or well, even before that, Mose Frazier, Anthony Miller was behind him. He was the guy who ended up stepping in after Mose Frazier. After Ant Miller, DeMonte Coxey was sitting there waiting in the wings. He stepped into that role once Anthony Miller was off campus. DeMonte Coxey was in that role. Calvin Austin was playing that sort of secondary role. He stepped into the Coxey role after he left. And then now you had Rock Taylor behind Calvin Austin, and Rock Taylor steps into that premier wide receiver role. But that wide receiver room, I'm going to be interested to see, you know, some of those guys who we're not talking about right now, who can step up and play a role, be a 200 or 300 yard wide receiver. Is it Keyondé Henry, the 4-star that they got last year in the 2023 class? Is it a guy by the name of Jacoby Banks, who has a lot of speed, transferred over from Houston this offseason? That's going to be something I'm watching pretty closely on top of, you know, the O-line and the secondary.
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right, and you painted the perfect picture of the revolving door that Memphis has had at the receiver spot. It's really been one very, very good receiver after the other. And with, you know, Demir and Rock as well, potentially out of eligibility after this year, Demir's a redshirt senior. Rock Taylor is a true senior. Like, are these, you know, we know Demir's
going to have to reload. You have no choice but to reload after this year.
Yeah, you have to bring those guys in, and they have to start producing now. You know, if we're going to see the next guy step up next year or start making waves toward the end of this year, because one I can specifically remember, you brought up Calvin Austin. I remember it was a game against Houston. I think it was his sophomore season where he scored 2 touchdowns, I believe, in that game. And that's kind of where we saw the glimpse of, okay, it's taken him a while to piece it together. You know, came in as a track guy, as a walk-on for the football team, and we finally started seeing him piece it together. So do we see that down the stretch from a true freshman in Keyondé Henry? Do we see that down the stretch from a sophomore and Jacoby Banks, the Houston transfer? Is it someone else that we're not talking about right now, that we're not paying enough attention to, that is able to step up and could be a guy that could take over the reins? So I know you feel good about the first three receivers in Demir, Rock, and Kobe Drake, but those 4th, 5th, 6th guys, you know, injuries at wide receiver are so prevalent, even if they're not major injuries. You know, being nicked up and having an ankle or a wrist or, you know, shoulder, whatever the case may be, and missing a couple weeks is definitely extremely possible. And so if you have something like that where a guy like Rock has to miss a game or two, is someone like Keyondé Henry or Jacoby Banks able to step in and fill that role and kind of replace that production from them? And does that give us a glimpse into what we could be seeing during the 2025 season? So I know, like you said, it's kind of a secondary conversation because everyone feels pretty good about those first three guys, but it would be a wonderful sign if we see one of those other guys step up and start making waves, maybe towards the middle end of the season, and use that as a springboard into next year. And I know we're not focusing on next year. We got a whole football season in front of us. If you do get production from a 4th guy that can step up this year, it helps this year and into the future. And I think that's why it is an important conversation to have.
Well, hell, we're in these seats, so we get to talk about the future, right? You know, those guys focus on the present. They focus on what's right ahead of them. We get to focus on the future. And I will say this, you have a guy by the name of Antoine Hill Jr. potentially going to sign and be on campus next year. What you need to have for him is some damn weapons on the outside that he can throw to. Need that immediately upon him stepping foot on campus.
Yeah, you're 100% right. The best friend of a young, potential true freshman starting quarterback is a good receiving core, someone that is able to bail him out in certain times. Obviously, offensive line is even more important than that and keeping him protected, but he's got to feel like he can have guys to rely on from day one, and that starts, you know, right now with spring practice, or sorry, fall camp beginning on Wednesday. Like, those things begin now. Those guys that can be, you know, the superstars of next year and of the year after that, like that all starts now. Yep. As much as we're focused on this season, the expectations surrounding it, you also gotta worry about future success and sustained success, and that all that starts right now, which is why the beginning of the football season, the beginning of the fall camps and the fall practices is so exciting, because it really is more than just one year. And I don't know if enough people are able to pay attention to that, of how important this is, not only for right now for 2024, but also for the future.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty confident this offense is going to look similar to last year as far as explosion and, you know, the balanced nature of it. Blake Watson obviously made it look relatively easy. You're replacing some guys on the offensive line, but you brought in a bunch of transfer portal guys to replace those guys. You seem to have some depth up there. What's your confidence level that this offense is going to be as balanced as it was, maybe even more balanced than it was a year ago? Because we know that Seth Hennigan, and any quarterback for that matter, does a hell of a lot better job throwing the ball when you're able to have a solid run game. You get those linebackers to bite up, you get those linebackers to cheat a little bit, and you have a lot more space to throw the football.
Yeah, I'm extremely confident in the offense, and I think, like you said, they could be just as explosive as last year, if not more. And I think you can make a compelling case that it could and maybe should be more explosive this year. I mean, it took that Memphis offense a little bit of time last year to gain the consistency that we saw down the stretch. And I think a lot of that had to do with, you look at the people that Seth was throwing the ball to. I mean, it's two primary targets in Demir and Rock Taylor. those were guys that he was still building chemistry with, especially Demir coming in as a transfer. So I think there was still some chemistry building that had to be done that now is, you know, at a very good
level. It's there already.
It's there already. You don't have to build that in-game. It's already there. And so I think that helps the passing game. And in the running game, Blake Watson was incredible last year, but there wasn't a ton of balance in that backfield. I think we've talked about this before. Blake Watson and Sutton Smith were such similar players and had such similar styles that it's hard to balance them out. And then really, if, you know, past that, you had short yardage backs. You didn't really have another potential threat. And I think this year you look at Mario Anderson, a more traditional between the tackles guy that can break off big plays and make big things happen. And then Sutton Smith, I still think, you know, after multiple years on campus, I still think there's so much untapped potential there. And I don't even know if he scratched the surface yet for what he can do as a dual threat back. And I think they'll really be able to tap into that this year with the balance between those two. And then the offensive line. No, you don't have, you know, returning player. You're missing Jacob Likes. You're missing McKylen Pounders. Those are two really big losses. Davion Carter at right guard as well. Like, those are three massive losses. But you filled those shoes with guys that have proven capable, albeit at other schools. Trent Holler, very good transfer coming in from Marshall. And then the tackles that I mentioned earlier as well, Chris Adams, Jalen Nichols, Kedra Lewis, some of these guys that, I mean, have shown that they can be really good players. I think Jalen Nichols was in contention for a starting spot.
He was going to be the starter until that ACL injury last year.
Right. So and Chris Adams was very productive at Old Dominion. So, like, you have these guys that can do it and can live up to what that offensive line did last year. And if that's able to gel now, if they're able to build that chemistry now and gel now, then I think by the time the season rolls around that this offense really could be humming from week one on, and it'll be hard to stop. So I know there are new faces out there, but I think there are strong arguments that this offense can be even better than they were last year.
Yeah, talking with Christian Fowler at C. Fowler, BCM senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. Now I want to get to a little bit of NFL. We have some massive, massive quarterback contracts that have been signed this offseason and a couple in the last week. Tua gets 4 years, $212 million. Jordan Love, who had basically eight really solid games and a really good playoff game last year against your Cowboys. You were in Arlington or Dallas for that game last year.
Correct.
He was very, very good, but he gets 4 years, $220 million, 55 per. He's tied with a couple of guys from a per-year basis to be the highest-paid quarterback in NFL history. What do you make of these quarterback contracts? We know that really the whole story is if you're the next guy, you're the highest-paid guy. But you get a lot of questions, and I've got a lot of questions past couple of days about, you know, is it worth it to go ahead and pay these guys like that? I think that's the wrong question, because when you look at these top eight paid guys in this sort of new age of quarterback in the NFL, they're combined 16 and 17 in the playoffs with zero Super Bowl wins. So is it worth it as far as championship odds and championship aspirations? Probably not, but I don't know if that's the right question.
Yeah, I think the right question is it necessary? And the answer to that question is absolutely. You have to have a quarterback to compete. You can have an incredible roster, but if you don't have a quarterback, then it doesn't really matter. And so with players like Tua and Jordan Love and Trevor Lawrence is another one I think that you could throw in there of, you know, is it deserving or whatever. Even if we haven't seen the playoff success, even if we haven't seen rings for those guys, you have to do it. Because let's just take the Dolphins, for example. They've got an aging running back and Raheem Mostert. Also, they have youth in that room with Devon Achain and Jalen Wright, who they just drafted in the fourth round out of Tennessee. But at receiver, you have one of the greats of this generation who's also aging. You have Jalen Waddle, who, you know, has been a really, really productive player in his first 3 years. So if you move away from Tua, if you decide, okay, we're not going to sign him to a long-term extension. He was already holding out early in the training camp. So if you don't do that, you're wasting time that you could be potentially competing for a championship.
And wasting a lot of money, too, because, I mean, what?
Yeah.
We have $30 million per year to Tyreek and $28 million per going to Jalen Waddle.
Right. So you're going to waste all this other money you're spending by not signing your franchise quarterback. It's just not possible. So I understand that people think these contracts are ridiculous. I understand that people think that these quarterbacks like Tua, like Trevor Lawrence, like Jordan Love don't necessarily deserve those contracts. But it's necessary. You have to make those decisions, and you have to do it. And for the Dolphins, I'll keep talking about the Dolphins specifically because I think it's a great example of it. You look at what Mike McDaniel does and his scheme, and Tua is tailor-made for it. Like, he is perfect for that system. Is he a top-five quarterback? No, I don't think anyone's trying to argue he's a top-five quarterback. But he's one of the best system quarterbacks in the NFL. There's not many quarterbacks that fit a system as perfectly as Tua fits Mike McDaniel's.
Yep, so I agree.
I understand you can make these arguments, but they're really irrelevant because you have to do it. And what's the alternative? Okay, we're terrible for a couple years, then we draft another quarterback high, and then we get into a repetition of the cycle. Because guess what? After 4 years, if he's been successful like we hope he has, then we've got to revisit this conversation all over again with a much bigger price tag, because now we're, you know, whatever, 5 years down the road at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I it's just, to me, it's a meaningless conversation. It's kind of a ridiculous conversation, because we all know if you're a football fan, you have to have a quarterback to compete. If you already have a successful quarterback in place, then you have to pay them or you restart the cycle. And Tua led the league in passing yards last year. It's what you have to do. So even if you don't necessarily agree with it or you don't think it's worth it, like you said, it's necessary. It has to happen.
Yeah. Now, those top eight guys I was talking about, Jordan Love, Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, Jared Goff, Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts. When you look at those names, you just hear those names. Who are the riskiest of those contracts that have been doled out?
To me, it's 100% Trevor Lawrence, and second behind him, I would say, is Jordan Love. And I say that because Trevor Lawrence, you know, was tabbed as a generational prospect from his days in high school, was one of the highest-rated recruits of all time coming out of Lawrenceville High School in Georgia. Obviously was incredible at Clemson, was tabbed going from Clemson to the NFL, as some people said, a lot of people said, the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck, and even other people went further than that and said the best quarterback prospect since Peyton Manning.
Mm-hmm.
And from Trevor Lawrence in his 3 years, I think we've probably seen about 12 to 15 really, really good games, and then a lot of mediocre games and some really bad games in the Urban Meyer era sprinkled in there. So Trevor Lawrence has not put together an entire season of consistently good play yet. And 2 years ago led Jacksonville to the playoffs and won a playoff game, a comeback against the Chargers. But outside of that, there hasn't been much success. This hasn't been a team that's won a ton of games in that time. He's been very up and down. When he's good, he's been really good. And when he's bad, it's been ugly. And last year, having a receiving core of Calvin Ridley and Evan Ingram and Christian Kirk, who I think is one of the more underrated number twos in the game, he still wasn't able to put it all together. And I know there was an injury last year, so there's that as well. But I just haven't seen enough from him to say that it's not risky. And then from Jordan Love, you can make a similar argument. He's a first-year starter who had 8 really good games and 1 really good playoff game. And I don't think he had too many games where you're like, oh my gosh, he is incompetent. But he definitely had mediocre games where you're like, okay, he doesn't look like a franchise quarterback. So I think both of those guys are risky because we have not seen a full season of consistency from them. We haven't been able to watch them from week 1 to week 18 and say, okay, these guys are 100% unquestionably the real deal among the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. And so even though I'm not arguing with those contracts, because once again, I believe they're necessary, I think they're probably the riskiest out of that group.
But I think all of those, there's a scale of risk. Even Joe Burrow has a risk with the amount of money you've paid for him and the amount of times he's been injured and off the field and where this Bengals roster could potentially go. There's risk involved in that, even though he went to 2 straight AFC championships, went to a Super Bowl, and has shown that he can win on the biggest stage.
Yeah, go through the list again one by one, and I'll give you risk.
All right, let's do that. Let's go out of 10? Out of 10, Jordan Love.
Jordan Love, I'd say a 7 because of the reasons just mentioned.
Trevor Lawrence.
Probably I'll go 6.5. I'll go a little bit less than 10.
Oh, okay. I think you're being even a little bit nice here. Joe Burrow.
Joe Burrow, I'd probably put him around 6 to 7 because of the injury history.
Tua Tagovailoa.
I'd put Tua about a 5, and I would say only because of the quote-unquote injury stuff. I know he had the hip injury at Bama and then the concussions, but I don't think it's as big of a deal as people make it out to be.
Jared Goff.
I don't think Jared – I think I probably put Jared Goff around a 4 or 5.
Lower.
I don't think he's that risky because okay. Probably lower because you know exactly what you're getting out of Jared Goff.
Right, but at the same time, he's been to one Super Bowl, right? Remember how that Super Bowl went? Not great. Had the best offense heading into the Super Bowl and scored 3 points. Scored 3 points as an offense in that game. Herbert.
Justin Herbert, 6.5. I'd put him a little bit higher just because what kind of success has he had? And I know there's a lot of factors to that, but he hasn't had any success. So it's got to at least be a little bit risky.
Yep, Lamar Jackson.
I'd put him probably 4. Yeah. I don't think Lamar's super risky. The only things you can say about him is did not finish the 2021 or 2022 seasons because of injury, and then also pretty much zero playoff success.
Yeah, and you just look, I mean, he has, like, when people, you know, castigate, go after Josh Allen for maybe a lack of getting over top of the Chiefs, you do have to put that same on Lamar. Lamar has given you reason statistically not to trust him in the playoffs. And the final one, Jalen Hurts.
Jalen, I probably same, 4 or 5.
Right, but I guess the point is every single one of these contracts, besides the 9th paid guy, which is with Patrick Mahomes, you're just taking an inordinate amount of risk by paying them the amount of money that you are. But again, going back to your original point, it is as necessary as possible to keep these guys around if they do perform at the highest of levels in the regular season. It's the truth of it.
Yeah, there's only one quarterback in the NFL right now that's being paid money, we'll say over $15, $20 million a year, that has zero risk baked in, and that's Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
He's the only one that doesn't have any risk.
Yeah, and then, here's the other thing is when you look at, sort of the high end and all the quarterbacks that are getting paid all this much. Patrick Mahomes' deal, when it was signed, people freaked out about it. Oh, $500 million? Half a billion dollars? Are you kidding me? That is insane. These contracts are out of this world, but now you see a bunch of people passing them up from a per-year basis. That contract is phenomenal. That contract is one of the best contracts in the NFL right now.
Probably the best. I mean, it's got to be the best. $50 million a year, the 9th highest paid quarterback based on per-year average, and he has won 3 Super Bowls and been to 4.
Has a chance to three-peat this year.
Has a chance to three-peat, has been to 6 consecutive AFC championship games, has won 2 MVPs. I don't know if you saw it, but ESPN did the top 100 athletes of the 21st century and then followed it up with doing a top 25 NFL players of the 21st century. Patrick Mahomes is at 2, and he is 27 years old.
Yeah.
Or 28 years old, whatever.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. Like, when we just look at Patrick Mahomes and what he's accomplished already, I think that, the amount of money he's being paid, it's a discount compared to the rest of quarterbacks. There's no doubt about that. But there is a point to be made about certain teams knowing how to get ahead of contracts and understanding, you know, what value is going to do. Value is going to do nothing but go up. I think the Lions have done a decent job of it, locking up a lot of their franchise cornerstones. The Eagles do a good job of it by locking up some of their franchise cornerstones, and the Chiefs are the best at it by far, and then they draft well on top of it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You have to get ahead of the market, and even if it seems absurd at the time, like the Patrick Mahomes deal did to some people paying him $500 million over 10 years, they knew what was going to happen. We all knew it was going to happen. The value's going to keep going up. Okay, He's the high watermark now. Give it, 2 years, 3 years, and he'll be the 9th highest. Like, it's not rocket science to figure out that as the salary cap increases every year, these contracts are going to go up. So instead of waiting, franchise tagging these guys, setting yourself back another year with the market, like, if you get ahead of it, you're at an advantage. And it might not be, that first year. But I think even people miss the mark on that because most of the time if you're signing a contract extension, it doesn't kick in until a year later anyway.
Right.
So like when Patrick Mahomes got the 10-year $50 million, he still had another year before that $50 million kicked in. And I think by that time he was probably 3 or 4 based on a per-year average. You said the Chiefs are the best example. I hate to say, but the Cowboys are the worst example.
Cowboys are the worst example. There's no doubt about it. And that's why, like, you see some people, you know, saying, oh, well, just give them time. They'll figure this thing out. They're asking for time. No, time does not work for you. It works against you.
Yeah, but look at, you mentioned the Lions. Look at what the Lions are doing right now, okay? They make a run to the NFC Championship game with a pretty big lead over the 49ers. Could have very easily been in the Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs. And what do? They lock up Goff. They lock up Amon-Ra St. Brown. They lock up Penei Sewell. They lock up Taylor Decker yesterday. Like, yep. Their linchpins are locked in outside of the ones that are still on early rookie contracts. You think Aiden Hutchinson's not going to get a deal end of this year before his fifth-year option and anything like that? Yeah, he's going to get locked up because that's what they're doing. They're getting ahead of the market. And right now, they have a lot of players that are the highest paid or near the highest paid of their respective position groups. But in 2 years, when they're still having sustained success, more than likely, those contracts are all going to look very, very good.
Yep. I am in full agreeance, and I hope the Cowboys take a lesson from a couple of these teams, because they are just behind the eight ball right now. And I fear that the worst is going to come if they don't figure this out soon. They risk pissing off just about everybody who's a franchise cornerstone for them right now. Micah Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, and Dak Prescott. But, Christian, I appreciate it, man. We'll do this again next week.
Yes, sir. See y'all back here next week.
That's Christian Fowler at CFowlerBCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive in the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.